KVEC.
You're listening to the Dave Congleton Show. Matt Hoy in for Dave, who will be back on the air, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, Monday. Next hour, we are talking with Matt Carroll. Matt Carroll is the peer communication instructor at Paso Robles High School. Thanks for coming on.
Hey, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Making the drive down. So, the kind of news hook for this is we had a Liberty High School student, I believe, which is the continuation school or the alternative school up there in Paso Robles, who was on Highway 101 a week and a half ago or so and stepped into traffic and lost her life. So we're going to get to that. Let's start out with this peer communication class that you've got at Paso Robles. Explain for our listeners kind of how it started, what it does, you know, give us an overview of it.
Absolutely. And once again, thanks for having me on. And the big thing about peer communication is in the title itself. We've carefully labeled what we call the class. And so it is a peer-to-peer communication class. And what ended up happening, you know, back in the late 1980s, early 1990s, was we found out students had some issues. And we've known about a lot of those.
Well, that didn't start in the late
80s. Exactly. We started looking at it, but we started to look at solutions as an education system. And we decided that we were going to investigate. And they found that most of the time, if you're looking at student drug use, students being bullied, students having social-emotional problems, that the number one thing where you can go and identify those things are with students. And students, they don't want to talk to me. They want to talk to people who are their age. The first person they're not going to talk to is the 32-year-old man in the class. They're going to open up to the person next to them. And so that's kind of the basis of the class is we identify issues. In the early 80s and late 90s, it was tobacco use and then alcohol use. And nowadays, we talk a lot about anxiety. And so the issues, they kind of shift, but the method doesn't really change. Students want to talk to other students about what's going on in their lives. And that's where this class came into being, is how can we utilize some of our student leaders on campus, our natural helpers, to help those who have social, emotional issues or need someone to talk to.
Okay, so how do you identify students who belong in this class?
Okay, great, and that's a great question. So leadership at our high school, they deal with things on a larger level. They deal with things at the macro level. We deal with things at the micro level. So the leadership students we are allowing in the class next year, where leadership and peer communication are going to be at different periods, but we focus more on the person, and so those leadership qualities are valuable, but they're not necessarily vital to the process. What we need is we need people who are empathetic. We need people who can recognize emotions and react to those emotions, who have open minds. And my biggest thing is I always want my class of 35 to 38 students to reflect the population of Paso Robles High School. We want differing opinions. Mm-hmm. We want different backgrounds. We want different cultures in our classroom. This year we have a foreign exchange student from Italy. And so we want to match the population of our high school as best as we can. A very imperfect process, but we try to do that. And so the first step is finding students from different groups on campus, finding students who are, you know, the popular football players, so to speak, and then finding that quiet young lady who's in the library, that quiet young man who's in the library. But it reflects the population of our school. And the next thing we do is we have an interview process. We ask teachers about these students. Is this the type of person that other students would walk up to and say, hey, I'm not feeling great today. I'm not in a great spot emotionally. Can I talk to someone? Mm-hmm. And so we need someone who's receptive to that.
Okay, so how many? You say you have 35 to 38 students in that class. On a typical year, how many students apply to be part of this peer communication group?
So we usually have about 60 students who apply. And you know, one of the first rounds of you know, our screening process or grades, because you know, it's an elective class. It's an A through G elective, which means that colleges will look at this as a legitimate elective that they want students to take. And so if a student has grades that aren't so great, or they need to make up classes, then they kind of take themselves out of the running. Mm-hmm. And it's unfortunate, because sometimes you lose great candidates because of that, but they have to go make up a math class. They have to go take care of an art class or something. So that's the first round. The second round is I ask teachers and counselors around campus about these students. Are they a natural helper? Are they someone who is receptive to other social emotional needs? Are they someone who is mentally tough and have rigor? Have grit. You know, somebody who can respond to rigor, because it's a tough instruction. I tell our kids that you're not necessarily writing a paper every week, but what we deal with is tough, mm-hmm. and so you need to be able to respond to that. And so that's the second round. Third round ends up with an interview. And what I do is I have the students interview. I have returning students and current students interview future students. And that's the third round.
So is how many years can a student kind of participate in this class? Is it generally 1 or 2 years, or do you have some all 4, or?
We don't allow ninth graders, and the reason we don't allow ninth graders
is because they're freshmen.
They're freshmen, and you know, if you're going to support people on campus, you got to know your campus. Mm-hmm. And so we do allow a few special 10th graders, difference makers at the 10th grade level, but mostly it's 11th and 12th graders. And traditionally, most students take it for about a year, but there's quite a few take it for 2 years. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have 2 young ladies next year who will be in the class for 3 full years.
Oh, wow. Okay. Sounds good. So what sorts of things are you, I guess, you know, the education speak things, what's your curriculum? What sort of things are you teaching these kids? You know, what does the class look like on a day-to-day basis?
Great question. First off, I was trained up in San Francisco through a peer communication curriculum course. And so it was a 2-day course where we're trained on how to teach this class. And there is a set curriculum that comes with it. Basically,
so you're smart. You can learn it in 2 days. It takes the students an entire... No.
Well, I do have a psychology background from Whittier College, too. So I do have some background in that as well, too. So I was able to put the class together and to take the class from a regular... college prep course to an A through G elective, I did have to add a few things to it. And so we talk about the number 42 in our class. There's 42 lessons the students have to take before they can officially become a peer communicator, before they're able to sit down one-on-one with another student on our campus and let them know about services we provide in our community and our campus, and services that we can provide as a class with students in it. You know, we do provide tutoring. We do provide help for students who are bullied on campus, students who need someone to talk to, students who don't know where those resources are. And so the magic number is 42. And so we do some things over the summer as well. There's a few lessons we have to accomplish over the summer.
Okay. Well, I'm all for that. You know, summer, I had AP classes where I had to do stuff in the summer. So I think that's a good thing. So at what point, you say you got students coming back for a new student, usually how far into the school year do they have to be before they reach that goal and can start actually working with other students?
Yeah, I usually have about 8 to 10 returners every year, so they're ready to go at the start of the year. It takes us until late October before they're ready to talk to other students, which is great, because Thanksgiving, Christmas time, those winter holidays, that's where we start to see a few of the social emotional issues on campus. And as a teacher, you really get to know your students a little bit better. And so those teachers can recommend, hey, Mr. Carroll, I need a peer communicator for this student I have in my class. That's where we, as educators, we really start to recognize those needs of students.
We're talking with Matt Carroll, the peer communications instructor at Paso Robles High School. If you've got questions for him, please feel free to give us a call, 805-543-8830. You can text that number as well, or 1-800-549-5832. This is the Dave Congleton Show on News Talk 920 AM, 96.5 FM, KVEC. We'll be back right after this.
She's Katie left me and you to ride. She caught Katie, left me a mule to ride. My baby caught Katie, left me a mule to ride. The train pulled out, I swung on.
Listening to the Dave Congleton Show on News Talk 920 KVEC. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, we're talking about behavior issues and high schoolers and kind of, you know, and making sure they grow up and don't do what this student up in Paso did last week. We're talking with Matt Carroll. He is the peer communication instructor at Paso Robles High School. Matt, So first off, kind of what's the process the students go through as far as learning how to listen to their peers? Because that's I substitute teach up there at Paso Robles. They talk a lot. They don't listen that much. I realize not listening to me is one thing, but you know, not listening to their peers too. So
absolutely, and that's a great question because I think there's millennials get quite a bad rap in the sense that they're always on their phones and they always have their earbuds in, and that's one of the first things we talk about is I don't want to see your cell phone and I don't want to see your headphones, and they struggle with that at first, but then they eventually learn to love and appreciate it afterwards because they do this thing called conversation on a daily basis with one another.
What a novel concept.
And they love it. I can't get them to be quiet. I can't get them to stop listening to each other. My class is one of the loudest on campus because they are speaking and they are listening. And through that interview process, through that screening process, we do find people who are natural listeners. That's what we're looking for. We can't have people in that class who just plain don't listen. We need people who have those natural listening tools, but we have to refine those tools too. And so I relied quite a bit on Julian Treasure's book, which is about listening. It's titled Listening, and there's a subheading to it as well. But he has a great TED Talk where he talks about how humans listen. And I show that to the kids, and we read articles about it, and we practice listening. One of the first exercises we do is they sit down for 10 minutes, 5 minutes, one person talks, another person listens for 5 minutes, and then they switch, and they constantly say that is one of the hardest lessons that I give in that class is sitting there and listening, and then not only that, but talking and learning that your body has those cues that show that you are listening, the nod of the head, the thumbs up, the you know, the eye contact. And so they know those things pretty naturally, but we refine those tools and we give them names. And so we have a 2-week-long lesson on listening and speaking and how to respond to questions as well.
So how do students you mentioned that instructors may, you know, tell you, hey, I need a peer counselor for these students. What are the ways that you identify what students need help from your peer counselors? Again, instructors are one. Are there others?
Yeah, we have instructors. Any adult on campus has access to our website and our form. And it's a Google form, and it's pretty extensive. You can check multiple boxes. As a student, are you worried about their grades? Are they getting enough to eat at home? Are they being bullied in class? There's multiple boxes you can check. And so basically, I become a gatekeeper of sort. And so my students here on campus, they're closest to other students. So a lot of the times, they'll catch those things before teachers. Mm-hmm. And they'll say, Mr. Carroll, I know a student in my second period class who is going through, you know, issues at home or a breakup that's causing them to be isolated. And so I'll sit down with that student and we'll fill out the form together. And so we have that data because I think everything needs to be data driven. What are the real issues at our campus? Well, I can look those things up and I can see that vaping is a big one. Being bullied is another one and feeling isolated is a third. And sometimes those shift throughout the year. And so we're able to recognize those by collecting the data. But anybody can report that to me. my students have what's called a duty to inform. And so they're not mandated reporters like I am. I'm mandated by the state to report any form of child abuse. Mm-hmm. It's the law. I can lose my job if I don't do that. They have a duty to inform. And it, obviously, they're students. They're not held to the same high standards I am, but they know it's important to inform. In fact, we talk about it quite a bit. We talk about it on a weekly basis. We talk mm-hmm. about if something feels weird or off, or you're not comfortable dealing with something, I'm the adult you hand it off to, our counseling department, our another teacher, our another mandated reporter on campus. And our kids and our peer class are fantastic at this.
So what are some of the success stories? I imagine that, you know, and of course we can't name names. We've got, you know, student privacy issues. But without naming names, just generally, what are some of the things that your peer communication students have done in the past that you're proud of, you know, that they went above and beyond and ended up with a result that it was very impressive?
They always surprise me on a weekly basis, but a few of the big ones are whenever I feel a student of any student, anybody under the age of 18 is unsafe, as a mandated reporter, I have to report that. Mm-hmm. And so with this class and with their duty to inform, I've made 4 calls to the sheriff's department this year, and I would say that, you know, with my students reporting that to me and saying, Mr. Carroll, there's something seriously wrong here. I wanted to let you know, can you do something? And then it's my job to dispatch basically the help that student needs who's in danger. I've made 4 calls to the sheriff's department just this year alone. And I would
calendar year or school year?
School year, this okay. school year. And so... with that, I don't know what the result would have been if my students didn't know that happened, but I know that the outcome probably wouldn't have been good. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, in those 4 cases, we had what could have been an attempted suicide. And so with my students informing me, because they're a duty to inform, and my mandated reporting, we were able to handle those things. And I feel pretty confident to say that my students were able to keep those 4 students safe this year. So those are the big ones. Okay.
You're listening to the Dave Congleton Show, KVEC News Talk, 920 AM, 96.5 FM. If you want to get in on the conversation, give us a call, 805-543-8830, 1-800-549-5832. We got a minute left before the break. Is the peer communication class that you've got, is this something that exists at other schools in the county, or is this unique to Paso Robles?
Yes, I know Atascadero High School does have a program, and it's a program that a lot of high schools or a lot of juvenile detention centers do have at their facility throughout California.
Okay, so there's one at Atascadero. Don't know about the other schools.
Right, yeah. It's a hard class to have because you have to have those high academic standards to make it a true elective on campus.
Okay. Again, we're talking with Matt Carroll. We're going to have a break here in a minute. If you want to get in on the conversation, if you've got a question for him about how students you know, can get help on campus, how students can get help at school with things that are, you know, beyond grades, give us a call, 805-543-8830, 1-800-549-5832. This is the Dave Congleton Show. Matt Hoy sitting in.
KVEC.
Show, News Talk 920 AM, 96.5 FM. Matt Hoy sitting in for Dave. We're talking with Matt Carroll, peer communications instructor at Paso Robles High School. If you want in on the conversation, give us a call, 805-543-8830, 1-800-549-5832. So let's get to kind of the news hook for all of this. we had a Liberty High School, which is the kind of alternative or continuation school up in Passerell's student, who was on Highway 101 in Templeton, walking along the highway, and then stepped in front of a car and was killed. I'm not sure anyone's specifically said, you know, anyone in authority, cops, highway patrol, whatnot, said it's suicide, but it looks like suicide and it kind of smells like suicide. Talk to us about the response at Paso Robles High School to this incident. I understand some of your students knew her. What happened in the aftermath of this?
Absolutely. And first, I want to pass on my condolences to the family, the driver of the car as well, all the young girls' friends and family. I know this has been a very tough time. I believe the funeral service was today. There was a memorial service last night. I know this is tough. And for me, you know, whether or not it was intentional or not intentional hasn't been a factor, because dealing with kids, dealing with their emotions, that's been the number one thing. And so as a school, we were informed that this happened because this young lady went to school in elementary school, middle school, with a lot of our students. And our senior class, junior class was directly impacted by this. And so I've been dealing with emotions. I haven't been following up on facts or any other details other than the raw emotions that have been in front of me. And so, you know, the day-to-day recently since this event has been, you know, students will have breakdowns in class. And, you know, as teachers, a lot of teachers on campus, they're not trained specifically to deal with that. Mm-hmm. And so my peer communicators, they become the front line for that. You know, my teachers on our teachers on campus, they can identify those students and say, hey, I need your help. I need to make sure that this student gets the help that they need. And so we had counselors on campus ready to help those who were grieving. And, you know, usually what happens is people who know the young lady, it might trigger some other person who may know that young lady a little bit as well, too. But then there's other people who were in her direct friend group. And so we were informed as a staff that you may have students who are emotionally down. You may have students who seem a little off today. And and we want to know who those students are so we can provide the help we can. And I always refer to my peer communicators as the emotional EMTs. They're the ones that identify these things, are able to dispatch that student who's in need to the resources we have on campus, our counselors, our teachers, our school psychologist as well. And so it's been a pretty emotional couple weeks here at Paso Robles High School.
Yeah, and the thing is, I was teaching, substitute teaching with Aaron Cantrell a couple weeks back. And I mentioned this the other day, and I'll mention it again just because it's, you know, the more things change, the more they stay the same. I was co-teaching with him, and he was showing a video from an interview from 1977 with a Holocaust survivor. And I forget the gentleman's name. But he had been, you know, he was, the segment was introduced as, you know, this is one of the most important topics of our time. And it was, and the Holocaust survivor was talking about, you know, the ones who survived, by and large, were the ones who fought and had something to live for. And if you felt like you didn't have anything to live for, you succumbed and you gave up, and the concentration camp, you know, took your life, basically. And, you know, here this is 1977, so we're looking at 42 years ago. Nothing's changed. As far as, you know, we've got students, we've got young people, I've talked yesterday about, you know, people who are older and mental health in this county. I still remember David Foster. I went to high school with him. He was a year older than I was. He played trumpet in the band. I played baritone sax. The band at my high school, we traveled all over the place. We spent tons of time together. He went home one weekend and hung himself. And it wasn't you know, back in that time, it wasn't a, you didn't, everyone didn't have cell phones. People didn't have answering machines. Some people did, some people didn't. The news spread over the weekend, but I can still remember his girlfriend found out Monday morning when she came to school. She'd been with, you know, the typical, I think her parents were divorced. She was with the non-custodial parent for the weekend. And she came to school, and that's when she found out that David had killed himself. And, you know, it's you mentioned one of your success stories was hopefully avoiding a suicide. But what are, you know, are we doing enough in our schools to help students who are, you know, undergoing some trauma, who are undergoing depression, to help them realize that it's a transient thing? You know, this too shall pass. There's the light at the end of the tunnel is not an oncoming train.
Yeah, first off, I'm so sorry for your loss. It's tough dealing with the loss of a friend, especially when you're young and you carry that pain with you for a while. And seeing a lot of you know, my students on campus and other students on campus deal with this, it's been tough. And you know, to answer your question, are we doing enough? And I know we're trying to do a lot, and we're trying to make this as perfect as possible. And so one of the first things we do is actually our entire school is trained in the signs of suicide. SOS mm-hmm. training is what it's called. And it's signs of suicide awareness training. It's required by the state that we teach our students to look for signs of suicide. That way we're able to help those people. And we talk a lot about the same things in my peer class. In fact, they get even more rigorous training than the rest of the school to identify those things. So we have 2,100 students who have been trained on looking for those signs of suicide. And if you recognize those signs, you report it to an adult, mm-hmm. a trusted adult. Then you have 38 other students on campus who are rigorously trained to look for that. So we have, you know, 38 students who are really trained on that. Mm-hmm. And then you have adults on campus who are trained on it as well, too. And I look at it as a large dragnet to where more and more students are using our services right now. Mm-hmm. We've had to expand our counseling department because of it. And I know there's things that a lot of people might be wondering, you know, the students have a duty to inform, and there's only so much they can handle. And when they're not comfortable, they hand it off to me. If I'm not comfortable, there are people for me to hand it off to as well, too. Mm-hmm. I have a psychology degree. I'm not a professional, so to speak, in terms of mental health. And so I hand it off to the mental health professionals. If I can't cover it, I have five trusty phone numbers of people on campus I can call. And I have never had an issue. I've never had to go to call number 4 or 5. I've gone 1, 2, and 3 on very busy registration weeks. Mm-hmm. But I've always, those people are always there. They're very dependable. Close friends of mine, we work as a network together. And our school also works with county mental health and the resources we have around us as well, too. So I think I think the majority of our kids on campus who are paying attention and listening and who are engaged, they know of those services. They know they're available. And I hope that my peer communication students and teachers on campus and other students who aren't even peer communicators can help those people access those programs is the big thing.
And this gets back to probably what I was talking about yesterday with Jill Bolster-White. Is there enough services? I mean, the primary goal of schools is to educate. It's not your primary goal is to make sure that everyone's mentally healthy at school. It's reading, writing, arithmetic, hopefully. When you pass those students who are having real issues so serious that they can't be handled at the peer communicator level, at your level, at the counselor's level, when that gets handed off to the county, is there enough help at the county level? I mean, I mentioned earlier the shocking thing that I learned yesterday from Jill Bolster-White of Transitions Mental Health was there are only 16 beds in San Luis Obispo County for severe, you know, people with severe mental health issues who need inpatient treatment. And that to me, you know, we got 300,000 or more people in this county, and there are 16 inpatient beds. That just blows my mind.
It's hard for me to talk about the county level. I know what we do with our 2,100 students at Paso Robles High School and the kids in our district. And I know a lot of the times kids with some serious mental health issues, they go away for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
What happens there just depends on what their parents can afford, what the state can provide, and what the county can provide. But I know what we do when we get them back. And we basically have a reentry meeting, mm-hmm. is what it's called. And so, you know, they gain some tools when they go away. I know that. And some kids receive more tools to deal with these issues they're carrying with mm-hmm. them than others. When we get them back, though, we try to reinforce the tools that they've gained. And we try to help those students with the help that they got. And we mm-hmm. try to also help them integrate back into school, because it's hard to be gone for a week. 2 weeks on home hospital or at mm-hmm. a facility, and then they come back to the high school, and we're helping them get back to their classes. The first thing that happens is the counselors meet with that student. The school psychologist meets with that student, and there's a reentry plan. And that a lot of the times teachers are, you know, told, hey, this student may need a moment. They're going to have a special pass to go see the counseling department. Please mm-hmm. allow that student to leave when they show that pass. And so we do have procedures in place for that. And
just to speak up really briefly, and as someone who substitute teaches, it would really help me as a substitute teacher if you would note that on your sub plans.
Absolutely.
So
absolutely. So one thing I do on my sub plans is I always tell a lot of those kids. You know, that like I said, that return back to us. They say, you need to let the substitute know you need to go to the nurse. Because on my sub plan, it says, any student who has to go to the nurse, please give them a pass mm-hmm. and send them to the nurse. And so if they forget their pass or if something happens, they have that, I guess, that safe phrase to say, right. I need to go to the nurse.
I've gotten 2-page sub plans.
Mm-hmm.
And I've gotten sub plans on Post-it notes before.
Absolutely.
So you know, and I want to help out those students too. I just need to kind of know about it.
Absolutely.
So we're talking with Matt Carroll. He is the peer communication instructor, Paso Robles High School. Last chance, if you want in on the conversation, give us a phone call, 805-543-8830, 1-800-549-5832. If you've got questions about how high schools are handling students with mental health issues, students who are in crisis, this is the guy who knows all about it. You're listening to the Dave Conklin Show, KVEC News Talk, 920 AM, 96.5 FM. Matt Hoy in for Dave. We'll be back after this.
Standing in the Alpha Beta parking lot, watching the sunset. I'll never forget watching all the reds and oranges slip away, letting go of yet another dirty day.
This is Matt Hoy in for Dave Congleton on the Dave Congleton Show, News Talk 920 AM, 96.5 FM, KVEC. Dave will be back on Monday. We're talking with Matt Carroll, peer communications instructor, Paso Robles High School. We have a caller with a question.
We got Jeff. You're on.
Jeff.
Hi. How are you folks today?
We're doing well.
My question is this. In your opinion, in, say, foster care, do you feel that the kids in foster care are getting proper, not just Paso Robles, but say California or in general, period, are getting enough attention?
You deal with kids who are in foster care. I don't want you to speak to California because I don't think it, but of the kids that you deal with, that's certainly something they need to overcome, unfortunately.
Yeah, Jeff, thank you for your question, because I think sometimes that population definitely gets overlooked. And a lot of times we identify those students who are in foster care, and we understand that they're going to go through an emotional roller coaster that's different than a lot of other students' mm-hmm. experiences. And so last year, we talked about that as a staff, that we have a large foster care population. We're going to have to look at this. And so our administration on Professional Development Day decided this is something we need to talk about. We need to spend some time on. We don't have very many Professional Development Days. So the fact that we took time out of our day, we understood that this is something that needed to be addressed. And so a lot of the times we're informed about that because those circumstances are a little bit different than other students. So we have quite a few kids who are in foster care. I can't give you an exact number because of privacy. But, you know, a lot of times these kids are dropped off by county officials, or they'll be with one family one day and another family the next week. And so we have to recognize there's a lot of shifts and changes. We are doing our best at Paso Robles High School to help that population. It's a population that we feel needs to be served more, that we can help more. And our counseling department, I think, does a fantastic job. A lot of the times, students who are in foster care who have these issues that are beyond my reach, I know they're getting the help they need with our school psychologists and our school counselors.
Jeff, did that answer your question?
Well, how about this? Do you feel that there's generally, when that happens, you have the Department of Social Services, Child Protective Services, which is involved. Do you believe they're doing their job? I mean, you yourself are saying that some of these kids, they're already in an at-risk situation, severe depression, possible suicidal. And to bounce them from foster home to foster home, I mean, is there enough of family reunification that could even be taking place? Because I don't think there is a lot of focus on family reunification, which mainly is the main purpose for Child Protective Services in general. And a lot of children may not be within foster care if they focused on taking care of the family, reunification, making it run, all four wheels running down the road smoothly.
Jeff,
what do you think about this?
Jeff, thanks for your call. I'm not sure. You know, part of the problem is some of this is beyond your book. There's lots of privacy issues, and you mentioned, you know, sometimes when you refer something to Child Protective Services that you learn, the feedback that you get is
it's minimal at times. It's a need to know basis, and so Jeff's question is actually really hard for me to answer, and I hope I can ease his worries a little bit on what we're doing as a school. I can't speak on Child Protective Services as much, but I know that I am constantly in contact with foster parents, with the student's family that they're with currently, maybe with their biological parents as well too, and we try to keep that line of communication open. What can we do to help this student? We have a great lunch plan that was rolled out this week to where, you know, free and reduced lunch has basically become anonymous at our high school. So those foster kids, we know that they're being served food, two meals a day they can get at Paso Robles High School, one meal a day for sure at lunch. And so we're trying to give them the basic needs and keep that open line of communication with the foster family and the biological family when necessary. We're trying to keep those open lines.
Okay. Thanks a lot for the call, Jeff. Matt, the other thing I wanted to bring up to you was, you know, the frustrating thing for me as a sub, and I know it's a frustrating thing for just about every teacher at every high school nowadays, are these cell phones and social media. So talk to me about kind of what instruction you would give to parents about social media and their kids. I'm kind of the opinion that it's 99% poison. But what do you think?
You know, a few things. One study that I read years ago when I was in college, and this was when cell phones and the smartphone was first coming out, was that if you're being very productive in that moment, writing an essay, you're playing an instrument, whatever it may be, and you pick up the phone and respond to whatever is Snapchat, Instagram, Facebook, it takes you.
I've been informed that only old people use Facebook.
Yeah, and I'm old now. You know, so all the kids told me that. So they said, "You're a Facebook guy, Mr. Carroll." I said, "Oh, thanks." But it takes you 15 minutes to reach that level of productivity that you had before you picked up that phone. And so productivity is an issue. The other thing is this, that I would let kids and parents know is that people are posting their best possible selves on Instagram and Facebook or whatever social media. It's the best picture with the best lighting and the best circumstances, and they're on vacation. That's not day-to-day life. Right. And I let my kids know that, you know, Instagram is great. Facebook is great modes, a great way to communicate. I communicate with former colleagues in college, former students at other schools. I see what they're doing. I see they're getting married, and it's amazing. But then, you know, just like anything, there's the good and the bad. And I would say, put the phones down. My family, we always had dinner around the dinner table, and I still love that. We set the phone down. We try to keep that away. And there's special circumstances where you have the phone out, but put your phones down and try to spark those conversations. Have some questions ready to talk to your kids and your family members.
Great. Thanks a lot, Matt. This is Matt Carroll. He is the peer communication instructor at Paso Robles High School. If you've got any questions, any follow-up about anything that has been on the show today, you can go to hoistory.com. I've got my show notes with links there. You can get a hold of Matt. You can see the website for his peer communication class. This has been the Dave Congleton Show.
Or you can go to 920kvc.com or Facebook at News Talk 920 for old people.
For old people.
News Talk 920kvec.
Dave Congleton is going to be back Monday. Matt Hoy been sitting in for him. Looking forward to the weekend. Thanks a lot, Craig, for shepherding me through these past 3 days. You've been listening to KVEC News Talk 920 AM, 96.5 FM. Have a great weekend.